From WKAR's Studio S at Michigan State University, this is Current Sports.
Welcome to Current Sports. It is 1 p.m. on this January 30th, 2014. We have a fantastic show, as always, in store for you. I'm your host, Al Martin. I'm a little sick today, okay? A little sick, and you know I'm going to blame it on Alex. He's been sick for about a week or so, and I think I've caught the bug. I think I have. So thank you, Alex. I am sick, but I'm going to fight this thing. I took about four or five, I don't know if this is healthy, but I took about four or five vitamin C pills when I woke up this morning. I don't know if I should have taken that many, but hopefully it kicks in and I fight this thing. But man, this weather, man, just has me down. Please warm up. I cannot wait until it gets to like the 30s or the 40s. My goodness. Goodness. You know it's a stretch when you're praying that the weather goes to at least the 40s or 30s. I mean, and that's comfort for us here in Michigan. Oh, my goodness. But again, we have a great show in store for you guys. And have you guys seen Richard Sherman, his latest comments concerning Peyton Manning? If you haven't, Sherman, he's not afraid to open his mouth and voice his thoughts on anything. And Richard Sherman was asked about quarterback Peyton Manning. He gave praise to Manning, you know, talking about how he's a great, just a really savvy quarterback. And, you know, then he went on to say that, quote, "They say he's a smart player, and I don't think that's a real reach." What he's saying there, now this is Peyton Manning on response to Sherman. Now, Sherman went on to say that Peyton Manning throws ducks. That's what he said, quote, ducks. Now, if you don't know what a duck is just a really, it's not a great throw. It's an inaccurate throw. It barely gets down the field. You know, it's a kind of just a bad NFL throw or football throw. Okay, and it's interesting because, you know, Manning is a guy who's always kind of, you know, played the fence. And if players do criticize his play or media criticizes the way he plays, he kind of, you know, doesn't acknowledge it and just goes with that blue-collar work ethic and says, hey, I let my play do the talking. But in this particular case, Manning responded saying that, quote, "They say he's a smart player, and I don't think that's a real reach." What he's saying there, "I do throw ducks. I've thrown a lot of yards and touchdown ducks, so I'm actually quite proud of it." Huh. I love it. You guys know me. I love when guys talk trash and challenge each other competitively, and, you know, it really, really amps up, you know, this the hype of the Super Bowl, and I'm definitely going to be, you know, keeping my eye on anytime Peyton Manning throws Sherman's way. It's going to be interesting, but I love it, man. I believe I have a caller to kick off the show. Tom, how you doing? Oh, no, hold on. Oh, never mind. We don't have a caller. I'm sorry. Aaron is trying to spoof me on today's show, I guess. All right. Well, you know what? Again, we opened our phone lines throughout this entire show. 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527 if you want to discuss anything. And if you tune into yesterday's show, we actually got into a pretty interesting debate. It was our Barbershop Wednesday segment where we hone in on a topic and go back and forth and debate about it. We're going to continue that debate today, and that debate was actually, should athletes be obligated to talk to the media? And yes, Matt and I had different views on it, and Alex kind of agreed with me on it. And that was a topic we kind of got cut short on yesterday's show. And we're going to continue that today. Also talk about KD and LeBron. It's also Tom Izzo's birthday today. He's 59. How about that? Tom Izzo turning 59 years old. He is truly a legend. Before we get into our quick hit headliners, we're going to go right into our guest for today's Current Sports. Now, he is a man who is in his 24th year with the Michigan State hockey program, making him the longest tenured coach in his position at one school in all of college hockey. Now, he has been a part of more than 400 Spartan victories with over 600 in his 30-year collegiate coaching career. It's my pleasure to welcome MSU assistant hockey coach Tom Newton of Current Sports. How you doing, Tom?
Great, Al. How about you?
Thanks a lot for joining us today. I'm really, really well, man. Just a little sick, but I'm going to get over it, man. Now, Tom, first of all.
Out.
Exactly. It's just weather. It's the weather, man. Now, Tom, first of all, I want to ask, I mean, what has led to you to stick around with this great MSU hockey program for so long?
I think that Michigan State's commitment to the hockey program gives you a chance to have success. It's a place that you you feel very good about bringing a young man here to develop as a hockey player, as a student, as a person. So, you know, I really felt it was a good product to be able to recruit to. And it's the East Lansing, Greater Lansing area. My wife and I feel it's the ideal setting to bring a family up. And we just felt that this was a good spot for us. And at some points in your career, it becomes a little bit more about your family and not as much about you. And this was just a great place to stick around. And it's home for us.
Tom, did you ever think that you would be 24 years here, stay 24 years here with the Michigan State hockey program? Did it ever even cross your mind when you first started here?
No, it really didn't. I didn't look at it that way. It was, you know, it was a way to continue to further a career, and I think, you know, you as an assistant coach, you go at things one year at a time, and but staying for and making this a long stop was not really on my mind when I came here in 1990.
Right. Right. Now, Tom, you have coached over 30 Spartans that have gone on to play in the National Hockey League. You know, guys like Torrey Krug, who actually will be on tomorrow's show. I mean, what's that feeling like when you see a kid that you used to coach make it to the league?
Well, that's a great feeling. It gives you a sense of satisfaction. And I get an equal amount of satisfaction when I talk to, you know, Dr. Troy Ferguson, who's now a surgeon in town. And, you know, Curtis Gibble, who's a highly successful businessman in town. I could go on and on forever. Brad Fast has a great business in the East Lansing area, developing young hockey players.
Yeah,
you see your students, your players go on. I think that it's just a great thrill when they go to the NHL. It's the NHL. It's the ultimate, and that's really neat. And every one of us that's ever played hockey and loved the game know that that's what we all strive for, and you really feel good about seeing some of your players make it there. But I'm every bit as proud of the ones that, you know, make it in other areas too.
Yes, without a doubt. And Tom, as you just alluded to, two have gone on to become medical doctors and earned their PhDs. Are they your doctor now, Tom?
Fergie's doing surgery, so I hope I'm not using him anytime soon. But
right.
If I need him, I know he's there.
There you go. All right, now, as far as the MSU hockey team goes, Tom, you all are coming off back-to-back losses against rival Michigan last weekend. I got to ask, just to kick off this discussion, what went wrong for you guys in those two games, Tom?
Well, I think that Thursday night, the first game, it was one of those games where it was not much to be decided. You know, we had opportunities to finish and didn't. With 2 minutes and 6 seconds, I believe it was, you know, they won a scramble in front of the net and got the difference maker. So I don't think a lot went wrong there. We didn't do everything correctly. But, you know, we were competitive in that game right to the end. And I guess maybe the biggest thing is that we had a few chances to score in the third period again, and we didn't get a lead. Friday night, I think, was a very strange game for our team. You know, Michigan's first three goals were very untypical, the type of goals we give up. And I don't know if we handled it that well, the adversity of giving up bad goals. And, you know, that was a tough game because it, you know, we got the night before we needed the power play goals. We got those power play goals, and Michigan's goals came a little too easy for them. And those things happen, and you have to be able to handle that, adapt to it, park it, as we call it, and then move on and go on out and get those back. So that was a real learning experience for our team.
Yes, Michigan State, for those who don't know, there are, for our listeners out there, Michigan State played Michigan last week Thursday, lost 2-1, and on Friday, that was, the Thursday game was actually at Joe Louis Arena in Detroit, Michigan, and on Friday versus Michigan in East Lansing at Munn. You know, Tom, something that head coach Tom Manassas said after those back-to-back losses that really stuck out to me was that, quote, "This team has a lot of growing up to do." He was really upset after that last loss. What does he mean by that?
Well, I think what Coach Anastas was referring to was the ability to handle all the situations that come along for a team. And that doesn't just mean adversity and bad goals, bad referee calls, things that don't go your way. We're coming off of two real good wins against Penn State the weekend before. You have to handle success and continue to prepare just on a consistent basis. And I think it was a statement that is all in the process of developing a culture and maintaining a high level of preparation and execution in your program, no matter how things are going. You have to have a standard, and you have to meet it each and every day, each and every week, each and every game.
Yes, that is so true. Ladies and gentlemen, if you're just now joining us here on Current Sports, we are talking with MSU assistant hockey coach Tom Newton. Now, Tom, you all have Minnesota on the road tomorrow night. Due to those two disappointing losses to Michigan, I mean, what has been said throughout this week to get this team on track? Any different approach to preparation this week to play the number one team in the nation?
You know what? No. We feel that we prepare consistently. We talked about how to handle situations, and that you know, your actions have to be consistent. And preparing for this team, you have to have your focus in place, because this is a really good hockey team. This is the best team in college hockey from top to bottom, and I think it's like a little bit. It's not really close with any of the other ones, and that in itself should get your mind right where it needs to be. And we know that we can play with them. We had them here at Munn in December, beat them in a shootout, and then lost the tight 3-1 game, where I thought they really played well, but couldn't get away from us. And we had a couple opportunities to score at the end that maybe could have made a difference. So we know we're in the ballpark in this game and this series. So we're ready, and we're focused, and we're ready to go see how good these Gophers really are. They are good.
Yes, they are. That should be one big game for you guys. Now, Tom, you are directly involved with the recruiting process for the squad, and you know Jay Sprague, who does a great job here on the show. You actually recruited him from Georgetown, Ontario, when he was 18 years old. You would drive all the way up there to watch his games. You know, for those like me that don't know much about college hockey recruiting, I mean, how difficult is it to find the talent needed?
Well, I don't think it's difficult. The evaluation on each and every player, you know, the majority of players come through, you know, basically five, you know, highly competitive leagues. Jay, the year before he came to Michigan State, played in the USHL, which supplies a lot of players to Division I college hockey, and that is the most highly a competitive league in the United States. Mm-hmm. There's the North American Hockey League, which is also a highly competitive league. Does not produce as many college players as the USHL. And then you have some Canadian leagues, the British Columbia League, the Alberta League, the Ontario League, where, you know, you go to those areas, there are players. The difficult part is, you know, 98% of the players are very similar, and you got to find those 2% that are just a little special, a little different. And in a lot of cases, they don't look that much different. It's little things they do.
Right.
It's what we call their hockey IQ that separates them, and then find the player that fits your program, and make sure that he really wants to be at your school. So that's the difficult thing to try and maneuver in the recruiting process.
Tom, does it make it more difficult seeing as though there aren't many high schools that actually have hockey programs specifically for that school? Does it make it more difficult? And why? I always wonder, why is that? Why isn't hockey so prevalent when it comes to the high school level?
Well, there are a lot of very good high school hockey programs, and two of our freshmen this year, Mackenzie McEachran and Thomas Ebbing, are products of Brother Rice High School. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are very good high school hockey programs. In this state, it's just that the AAA program seems to have more, they play more games, it goes longer, and it seems to attract more of the elite players. But there are very good high school programs, and there is something to be said for high school hockey. I think that it's tradition that basically is the difference. I think being so close to Canada, the Canadian system is a club-type system, as opposed to where we're heading off to tonight to prepare to play Minnesota. High school hockey is king, and it's just a different philosophy, and I think there is some real pluses of both philosophies. I really do.
So it all depends on the state, really, I guess, right?
It really does. Yes, it does, though. Yep.
Definitely. Now, you know what, Tom, I've gone on record of saying this. Now, I want to talk really briefly about the frustration side of recruiting, because, I mean, these are young kids that, as you have probably dealt with, that, I mean, they really change their mind at the drop of a dime. I mean, I'm sure you've dealt with that. And how frustrating can recruiting get?
Well, I you're absolutely correct. And I think the frustrating part at times is that, you know, some of the parental guidance they get, you kind of wonder what's going on, and parents and sometimes have a tendency to step back. I've seen so many instances of just parents really doing a good job of letting their son, you know, go through the process, discussing it with them, letting him make a decision, but keeping his goals and what's really important in front of him, so he's guided in making good decisions. And then once a decision is made, saying to the young man, now this is it, this is what you want to do. Mm-hmm. So we're not jumping all over the map again once the next flavor of the day comes by. And you know, overall, I think the hockey kids do a pretty good job. I know some of my co-workers in other sports might not quite say that, and it's a real tough business dealing with, you know, 17 and 18-year-old young men and young women, because sometimes they don't know what they want, and sometimes I think that's okay too, because they really don't know. But it can be frustrating, and you just have to remember what you're dealing with, and that is a 17, 18-year-old young person.
Yes, that is so true, and I'm pretty sure a big day coming up for you. I mean, National Signing Day, February 5th, right?
No, we don't sign until – we signed in November.
You guys signed in November, okay. It's different with hockey, okay.
Yeah, we're kind of with the hoops guys.
Gotcha. Makes sense. All right, now, Tom, you know, going back in time for a sec, now, you scored 140 points in 139 games for the Bowling Green Falcons back in 75-79, skated for three CCHA regular season and two playoff championship teams for then BGSU coach Ron Mason, who is also a revered MSU hockey head coach and athletic director here. Talk about Ron for a second. He was just inducted into the U.S. Hockey Hall of Fame. I mean, what does Ron mean to you, Tom?
Well, Ron means a lot. Our relationship has lasted a lot of years and has gone through many different levels. At a younger age, he was, he was a coach. He was a person that taught me a lot about the game. When I got to college, he was the person that kept me focused on what I really needed to do and kept me motivated to be a hockey player, but made it very realistic that I probably wasn't going to be going to the National Hockey League. So you should probably really work hard at school, young man. I always thank him for that, because he did it in a nice way that he didn't kill my dream and my motivation to be a better player. But I would have hated to have think how my life would have gone without that education and the opportunities it provided me. And then as I got into coaching, even before I worked with Ron, he was very good at mentoring me, in a nice way, telling me what I needed to accomplish to get to the next level, to work at schools that I thought were good places to work. And then once I got the opportunity to work with him, he became a real person that allowed me to grow, gave me enough responsibility at the right times, and I'm forever indebted. And now we're friends, and he's a good friend. Ron's a good team guy.
He's
a team guy, and he bleeds green and white, boy. When we don't win, he still doesn't sleep. So.
were you at his induction ceremony recently?
Oh yeah, absolutely, I was, and that was a great honor. A little late in coming, in my opinion, but certainly that was a lot of fun. Great night and well deserved.
Yes, without a doubt. All right, Ron. Tom, I'm going to let you go for a second. Now, before we let you go, though, Tom, this weekend is a huge weekend in the world of sports, seeing as though it's Super Bowl weekend. Really quickly, who are you going with, Seattle or Denver?
I'm going to throw my lot with the Denver Broncos. I have so much respect for Peyton Manning. The way he goes about his business, the way he represents his team, the way he represents the game of football, and my wish is for Peyton to go out on top, win a Super Bowl here, and then retire. Because I want to be able to see that man walk around and be able to get out of bed in the morning and still have a real good quality of life. And I see the physicalness of that NFL game, and a man his age that's had the issues he's had.
Mm-hmm.
Boy, one more of those wrong hits, and I don't want to see him go out that way. He's been too great, and he's too much of a competitor. I just think it'd be the perfect ending to a perfect career.
Yeah, that is so true. And, of course, Peyton will undergo the neck injury analysis this summer to see if he will, in fact, return for another year. Well, there you have it. MSU assistant hockey coach Tom Newton. They take on number one Minnesota tomorrow night on the road, and I believe you're leaving pretty soon, right, Tom?
Yeah, we're head to the airport here in the next 10 minutes, and I gather we're flying into a little bit of weather out there in Minnesota, so... It might be a little longer trip than we expected.
Yes, yes. Well, we wish you safe travels. Tom, thanks so much for joining me today. You take care and travel safe.
Appreciate it, Alan. Thanks for having me on.
No problem. All right, again, that's Tom Newton. Again, the MSU hockey team takes on the number one team in the nation, Minnesota, tomorrow night. They are on the road. Definitely look forward to watching that one and see what happens there. All right, well, let's hit the break. When we come back, we're going to continue our Barbershop Wednesday debates that we had yesterday. Should athletes be obligated to talk to the media? What do you think? 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527. Call in and give your thoughts on it. Current Sports will be right back. Welcome back to Current Sports. I'm your host, Al Martin. Well, again, we are opening our phone lines. throughout the rest of the show. And we're encouraging you to call 517-355-9527. Again, that's 517-355-9527. We're going to resume our Barbershop Wednesday that we debated yesterday. We got cut short yesterday when talking about it, and I'm going to dive more into it today. Should athletes be obligated to talk to the media? What do you think? You know the number, or you can go to Facebook.com/currentsports, give your thoughts there, or even tweet me at AlMartinWKAR. Before we resume that conversation, let's go into our current sports quick hit headliners for this January 30 of 2014. All right, the Michigan State women's basketball team returns home to host Wisconsin tonight at 7 p.m. The Spartans are coming off an 82-68 win at Ohio State on Sunday to remain in second place in the Big Ten. Michigan State leads the all-time series with Wisconsin 38-25. The Spartans have won four straight meetings, holding the Badgers below 50 points in three of those games. In East Lansing, MSU is 23-6. Against the Badgers, including winning seven of the last eight matchups. All right, in the world of men's college hoops, Michigan welcomes Purdue to the Chrysler Center, a 9 p.m. tip time tonight. Coming off a win in East Lansing, of course, the University of Michigan Wolverines, men's basketball team is riding a 9-game win streak that includes a 7-0 record in Big Ten play. The streak marks the first time the Wolverines have started conference play with seven straight wins since 76-77. Michigan has beaten three straight top 10 opponents for the first time in school history. Also want to note that Northwestern added to number 14 Wisconsin's woes in men's basketball, 65-56. W in Madison, and Penn State guard DJ Newble nailed a pull-up jumper over Ohio State guard Aaron Kraft with 3 seconds left in overtime, and the Nittany Lions rallied to upset the Ohio State Buckeyes 71-70. Our hearts and prayers go out to the Bulla family, because MSU legend Hall of Famer Henry Bulla is in fair condition after suffering a stroke on Monday night. The former MSU player and coach turned 80 on Friday and was recently received a birthday tribute at the Kellogg Center on January 11th. He was inducted into the MSU Athletics Hall of Fame in September. We really hope that Henry is recovering well from that one. Joik Bell, Lions running back Joik Bell, is spending some of his offseason on stage. Yes, the Broadway stage, that is. Bell made his Broadway debut as a bartender in a production of Rock of Ages last night in his first time on stage. He went on to say, "I really enjoyed it. It's kind of like Sundays. You got a big crowd out there, and there's no time to be nervous." Now, Bell's 8 minutes on stage included a curtain call that featured his hip hop hooray touchdown dance. So there you have it. Joik Bell getting his acting on. Gotta love that. Seahawks cornerback Richard Sherman, again, he has done nothing but hype praise on Peyton Manning and the Denver Broncos offense. Now, while ranking Manning as the smartest quarterback in the NFL, Sherman didn't hold back when questioning Manning's throwing ability, saying his arm, however, is another story. His passes will be accurate and on time, but he throws ducks. Sherman has acknowledged every member of the Broncos receiving corps, but still has faith in himself to shut down any of them, saying, quote, "Whoever lines up on the left, whoever lines up on my side is who I'll match up with. That's all it really comes down to." Sherman, yes, the confidence is brewing off of him. I think he's the best corner in the league. I don't know. Andre Drummond has been selected for the rookie sophomore game. Last year, Pistons starters Andre Drummond and Brandon Knight represented the Pistons as rookies, if you remember, in the Rising Stars Challenge. This year, Drummond has been selected to participate on the sophomore team. Now, Andre Drummond is averaging 12 points, 12 rebounds per game this season. And also, former University of Michigan players Trey Burke and Tim Hardaway Jr. will also be joining Drummond at the Rising Stars event. But as members of the rookie team, Burke has been averaging 13 points and 5 assists per game with the Utah Jazz, while Tim Hardaway Jr. has been averaging 8 points per game with the New York Knicks. The challenge will take place on February 14th at 9 p.m. in New Orleans. All right, and Rory McIlroy, Tiger Woods has some chasing to do, folks. He currently trails leader Rory McIlroy, who is making it look easy on the European Tour. McIlroy shot 9 under par, a 9 under par 6. 63. Wow, it sounds like my golf scores. No, I'm just joking. In the first round of the Omega Dubai Desert Classic to hold the lead. So, Rory, looking good after the first round. All right, well, those are your current sports quick hit headliners. If you want to call in and share your thoughts on any of those, you can call in at 517-355-9527. Again, 517-355-9527, and share what's on your noggin. You can also go to our Facebook page, facebook.com/currentsports, and even tweet me at Al Martin, WKAR. I believe we have a caller on line one right now. How you doing? And welcome to Current Sports.
Hi there, Al. How are you?
How are you doing, brother? You all right?
I'm doing good. I love your show from 1 to 2 because, you know, some of the stations carry nationals, and it's really nice to have a local station.
Hey, thanks a lot. We appreciate the love.
I think if you're taking money and people are coming to see you at games, no matter which one of the pro games, I think you have an obligation to be interviewed. That's simple as that. That's the way I see it.
So you do agree that it should be an obligation for athletes to you know, have media obligations?
Well, they're taking money.
There you go.
As pros, I think it's part of, if you developed a job description for them, I think that should be in the job description.
I totally agree with you. Hey, thanks a lot for the call.
Okay.
Appreciate it. All right, well, that's a great segue to this segment. Barbershop Wednesday, of course, if you tuned in yesterday, we started the discussion yesterday on whether or not professional athletes should have an obligation to talk to the media. Should it be a requirement? Now, this discussion is coming up, of course. We decided to have this debate due to Marshawn Lynch. Now, it's so interesting. Alex and Matt now joins me now. And I don't know if you guys saw yesterday's presser, but Marshawn Lynch, he continued to speak to the media Wednesday. And, you know, it was kind of deja vu from his first media day segment, if you will. Now, Marshawn went on to talk to the media, I believe, for about less than 10 minutes. But he did answer questions honestly. For example, Lynch admitted that he's only showing up because so that he wouldn't get fined by the NFL, saying, quote, "I'm here, man, so I don't have to pay the fine." End quote. That's the only reason Lynch showed up, and he continued to the media members fired questions at him, and Lynch simply said, "Hey man, I'm not here to, I don't know, I have no idea, I'm just here so I don't get any money put out my pocket." So that's basically what happened yesterday, kind of deja vu what happened on media day. And again, we beg the question, should athletes have to talk to the media? Again, 517-355-9527. Let's dive right into it, guys. You guys, you know, heard my stance on it yesterday. I do think that athletes should be obligated to talk to the media. One, I'll start it off by saying journalists have jobs to do. Simple as that. When you talk about the game, if an athlete has a big game, the journalists have an obligation and have a job to get that story out and to hear from that source itself, that being the players. It's what makes it, it provides depth to the piece, point blank period. They should definitely have that obligation because it's a part of the game. Now, part of a player's responsibilities, when you talk about the NFL specifically, is media availability. It's required by the league because the media and the television networks, let's be honest here, they pay a large portion of everybody's salary. Let's not get that twisted. I mean, it comes with the job. I mean, if you look at the Super Bowl that's about to take place this weekend, a lot of what comes into players' paychecks has to do with the networks and the companies being put on that national stage to carry these games and to cover these athletes. I mean, that's as simple as that. So if television networks are putting money in your pocket as an athlete, why can't you sit up at a presser and answer a few questions? That's the way I feel about it. I'll kick it off with that. Matt, go ahead.
All right, Al. I just feel it's funny. Marshawn Lynch not speaking to the media. You say journalists have a job to do, and they had a job to do this week for Super Bowl Media Day. What was the biggest story? It was Marshawn Lynch not saying anything. So even by not talking to the media, they still got their story. They got the best story of the entire week.
I don't know if that was
what's
the biggest
bigger
story. Well, I mean, Richard Sherman calling out Peyton was pretty big, too.
That happened a month ago, though.
But still, I still think I was big. All right, go ahead.
That's what I'm saying. You don't need to say anything for journalists to get the story. It's not like, what was he going to say that would be more interesting than him saying anything at all?
Fans want to hear from the players. After LeBron James or Adrian Peterson has a big day, I mean, we want to hear from the source.
Okay,
about the
perfect.
Big day.
Two examples in Detroit. Pavel Datsyuk, Miguel Cabrera. Mm-hmm. What have they ever said in a post-game presser that's endeared them to fans more than their performance on the field?
Well, I mean, I'm talking about overall, Matt, here.
Okay.
I would like to hear from an individual. If an athlete goes and you know, scores four touchdowns, 300 yards on the ground, what if he has a big day, I want to hear how he did it. I mean, how he feels afterward. I mean, you don't just don't want to hear just total silence from the guy after. I mean, come on. I want to hear from the source.
So Cabrera hits four homers.
And the fans do, too.
Cabrera hits four home runs. What does the one sentence in the post-game presser really add to the luster of his day?
Depth. I mean, just imagine.
Does it add depth? Does it really, though?
That's journalism. If you're reading an article on
but Miguel Cabrera is not a journalist. Why does he care what's being written about him?
If you're reading an article where Miguel Cabrera hits four home runs, and there's not one quote from in the entire article, that's bad journalism, man. Come on. Come on. Let's be honest here. Not one quote from him. No reaction.
How many quotes do you see from Miguel Cabrera?
If I went to a basketball game and just shot highlights for Current Sports TV and didn't get any bites from the players on a buzzer-beating win, if it was a buzzer-beating win, or from the coach and his reaction afterwards, it dilutes the piece, period. That's journalism 101, baby.
So they have to do your job?
It's a part of my job to get the reaction of what happened in that moment. They teach me that in journalism school. That's journalism 101.
That is on your end.
Yes, I got a job to do. If I don't get reaction from the players or the coaches, I'm not doing my job.
What's more likely to have a guy stay in the pros? His performance on the field or that he's a great talker? You can be a great talker with the media. You can be a great talker with the media, and if you stink on the field, you're not going to keep your job. They're not going to keep you around.
Matt, that comes with the package. That comes with again, these television networks are paying these players. Essentially, they are paying these players with these huge contracts to carry these games on national stages, and you can't give me 2 seconds of your time after a game to talk about how does it feel after scoring four touchdowns? Come on, man. It's petty. Why can't Marshawn Lynch just go to the stand, give us a few quotes so we can put it in the paper, and go on about your day? Come on, man.
That's exactly what he did. He went out for 6 minutes.
He didn't say anything that entire press was saying. Basically, he said, hey, I'm only here so I don't get fined.
So now you're dictating what he says? He has to give you interesting answers?
Give me something. I mean, dude, Alex, what did you? We'll get back. Alex.
I don't know how I feel about this, to be honest.
Well, yesterday you said...
Yesterday you weren't sick.
Well, yesterday you said that you do think that athletes should be obligated. You know, flip-flop now?
I do think that they should be obligated to talk to the media, because the point is to get rid of the Iron Curtain that's already lying there to the public and minimize the harm, okay? Now, if we're talking about a good performance, if he hits four home runs and...
I don't think it matters with the performance, to be honest, but go ahead.
Well, if he hits four home runs and he has a great game, other than something that's investigative, because that's obviously you're going to say something on that. But with the Marshawn Lynch thing, if you're leading up to the Super Bowl or you hit four home runs and you want a couple quotes from him, then, I mean, yeah, he should be talking to the public about the truth, but the truth's already there. The facts are already there. There's no harm to be minimized.
So can I bring up a scenario?
Okay.
Let's go to Jim Schwartz.
Do you see what I'm saying, though?
I see where you're going. Jim Schwartz. Let's go back to the fake field. What was it, against Pittsburgh, I think? The fake field goal incident. Got criticized left and right for it. Why would you go? Why would you, you know, go for the fake field goal on? It was a fourth down when you just kick it through the uprights. That's a moment where the coach is being criticized. Why would you do that? It makes no sense. Fans want to know, and fans have the obligation to hear from the coach on why that moment occurred. Fans, again, are paying the coaches as well because they're paying tickets and paying your salary. They have a
coaches and athletes. That's apples and oranges.
No. Hold on. So.
Yeah, so a coach is different than a player.
So you feel as though a coach should be obligated, but not a player?
Yes.
Coach is the CEO
of the team. They are the face of the franchise.
What if a player makes a questionable mistake where fans are like, what's going on? Professional athlete.
Like Benny Fowler earlier in the season when he made himself unavailable to the media and you got mad about that too?
Yeah,
it doesn't make any sense. He's a college athlete.
It's a part of the game. We're talking about professional athletes here.
Okay.
Guys, fans are paying these. Fans are going to the games. Their butts are in the seat. And that money that you're paying for that ticket is going in the pockets of those professional athletes on the field. If a player makes a questionable decision out there and fans are like, what in the world? I want to know why he made that decision. They have an obligation to hear from that player and hear what he said.
So what do you think when they say no comment?
At least he went to the podium.
So that's all it takes.
At least he
went to the podium. That's it.
At least he went to the podium. At least he went to the podium.
I did see. At least he does address it in a way.
At least,
but,
exactly.
But what? But what I don't understand though is if he hits four home runs, well, I mean, yeah, maybe he had a chili dog. Like, what are we talking? Like a major league here. Maybe he had a chili dog that pepped some dumping. I don't know. But if he has a decent game. If he has a decent game, or maybe it wasn't, was it rookie? I think it was a little big league where he had.
I think we're getting off course here.
Anyway,
yeah, we're getting a little off course.
Anyway, regardless if it was, I mean, four home runs obviously is a big deal. But if he hits a couple home runs, he has a good game. What is he going to say that's outside of the performance? If you're the fan in the seat, you're paying to see him perform well.
I want to hear how he feels after hitting four home runs.
What's he going to say? Oh, it felt
great.
What
does that matter?
It felt great. I love it. Put it. Print it.
What is wrong with it? How is that interesting at all?
What is wrong with him? Why can't he go to the media?
It's not a matter of wrong. It's a matter of time. It's a use of time. No one's going to sit there and read how he felt after hitting a home run.
Listen. This is my point. This is the problem I have. Why? What harms an athlete going to the podium and addressing anything? Why shouldn't they? Why shouldn't they go to the podium?
That's where I see you on.
What's the problem with an athlete? If they say one thing that's out of bounds,
then they're a pariah for weeks.
Matt, what is the problem with an athlete after a game going to the podium and answering a few questions?
But what is the problem with them not doing it? That's what I'm asking you.
What's the problem with that?
What does Lynch have to say that's out of bounds?
What does Lynch have to say that's out of bounds?
Yeah.
No, my question is...
Why is Lynch not saying anything out of bounds?
My question here is, why... What is the problem with an athlete after a game going to the podium and answering a few questions?
There is no problem. Then but Al, why, what is the problem then, with then, them not doing it? Because the fans don't get
because
the
you
extra
address
look
it.
Into
be
their...
Be a man and address
oh
it. If something, if it goes wrong, be a man, go up to the podium, answer a few questions, and go on about your life. Period. It's journalists, this is what I'm saying. This is the big thing I'm harping on.
Okay.
Media... essentially are paying these athletes, professional athletes. They're putting money in their pocket. So why can I get a quote? Why can I get a quote?
I'm pretty sure it's the other way around.
No, it's not.
I feel like sports media depends on athletes more than athletes depend on sports media.
No. The media industry drives. Look at college football. They had like five networks covering the national championship. Left and right.
Would they be covering if there wasn't college athletics?
It's ridiculous. I don't see if a player... after a game, if he has a bad game, well, whatever scenario it is, I don't see anything wrong with him going to the presser and answering a few questions at all.
I don't see anything wrong with him not wanting to talk to the media. If he's not going to talk to the media, go to the podium and say, if he doesn't talk to the media, you still get the story. You still get, oh man, why didn't he go? Why didn't he talk to the media?
Insight.
Why didn't he do
you get,
this?
When you hear from players, when you hear from the mouth itself, you hear from the source itself in those moments.
Okay.
That's journalism. Come on, man. That is journalism 101. Point blank, period.
I don't see how it is the athlete's responsibility.
And if he doesn't
want
to talk, do the A-Rod. Go to the podium and do the A-Rod. Just say, we won't talk about that. But at least we got to see you be a man and go up there and face the situation. Period. I don't know. I see nothing wrong. Open up the phone.
I don't see how it's his responsibility to give interesting quotes for a journalist.
We have Mike from Saginaw on line one. Mike, how you doing?
Thank you very much. I want to talk to you about since you guys are debating about Marshawn Lynch and not talking or talking to the media, what about Jonathan Martin and Richie Incognito? And also, I'd like you to talk about the union situation with the Northwestern football team. This is a great debate because I figure that it's finally that some college kids are really stepping up and thinking for themselves. And what do the media do? Well, let's criticize them and beat them up because even they want to think for themselves. The idea of athletes being able to talk about their conditions and be able to talk about their practices and their games and nothing about how they're being treated as students and athletes. And because I figured that a situation like a Mike Rice come along or a college football team like a Bobby Petrino come along or some of these coaches who go out and do kind of behaviors that the athletes, if their behavior be like the coaches will, they'll get criticized, scrutinized more than some of the coaches will.
Right. I hear you. Hey, thanks a lot, Mike, for the call. Appreciate it. Yeah, what Mike is alluding to, I mean, that's a conversation I wanted to have on the show, too. If you guys know, the Northwestern football players or athletes have formed a union, a players union, looking for representation because they feel as though they're not being treated right as far as they want representation in the whole decision-making process of college athletics and scholarships and improving conditions for the athletes, whatnot. I think it's very admirable. But sticking on the subject at hand, when you look at this, and he brings up the whole Jonathan Martin, Richie Incognito situation. I believe Jonathan Martin is doing a sit-down, where he did a sit-down with Tony Dungy, and which is airing this Super Bowl weekend, and he's finally addressing his thoughts on the whole situation. Now, if you remember, Richie Incognito did an interview earlier around a week after the incident took place or a week or two after the incident took place, and that situation right there is, to address Mike's question, I think that's totally – I don't know.
You're going to say that's different?
When you look at this, because that has legal implications. I mean, the whole bullying thing. I mean, he's filed grievances legally, all that kind of thing.
But wouldn't that be a peek behind the curtain into the Dolphins locker room?
It would. It is. I think that Jonathan Martin should have came out way earlier and addressed the issue, to be honest with you. I think him lingering and finally now coming out and addressing the issue now on Super Bowl weekend of all places to do it, I don't think it was the time and place to do it, but I think he should address it early. I have more respect for Incognito how he addressed the situation because he did it earlier. I mean, I think just waiting this long just painted a bad the hard sympathy that I had for Jonathan Martin kind of has dwindled a little bit in that regard because hey, face it straight up, what's going on here? You know what I mean? Letting it linger, but addressing this though, again, harping on it. Sports are a business, and athletes who play the sport, especially when you talk about in their relation to the media, I'm really harping on that, they have an obligation to talk and to answer a few questions. I see nothing wrong with that.
Okay, I think that an athlete is more valuable for his actions on the field. People pay to put their butts in the seats to see Pavel Datsyuk score 3 goals in a game. They do not pay so they can hear him, you know, have a short little stint at the podium.
You don't know what he could say. Every athlete who has a big game doesn't just come out and say, oh, I played great.
But
they also
pay to see the journey-type stories, the feel-good stories that you're not going to get from sitting in the seat. What was the inspiration behind Cabrera?
People pay for the Free Press. Yeah. People pay for LSJ. People pay for all of that stuff. Sports Illustrated.
That I understand.
ESPN Magazine. They pay for all that kind of stuff. You know what I mean?
For like the features, the stuff you're not going to see just in the seats.
Right.
Like what happened in the clubhouse after. Stuff like right. that. But what I don't see, though, and this is where I side with Matt, is what's wrong with him not going to the – why is it an obligation that – he needs
that was
to,
the entire argument, though.
If there's nothing that needs to be said about someone, like let's say he hit a home run or he had 2 home runs, and you're asking Cabrera, who hit the home run, to come after the game and say, you know, Cabrera, can you come on stage and on the podium and talk about your home runs? He's like, it was just a home run. I don't really want to say
it. Not every journalist asks that same cliche question after that moment. I mean, you think during a presser, every question is not, how does it feel? I just use that as an example. I mean, there may be questions about the overall team. What did he do, his pregame routine? Something like that. You get more, there's more depth. These are not journalists that are asking, talk about that moment. You
but
know
it
what
does
mean?
Happen.
That's not every does happen because that's a cliche question.
But it happens.
But he's not sitting up there for 20 minutes taking questions from different journalists asking how it feels after that moment. I mean, come on, guys. Let's be real here. We've all been to pressers. We go to the Tom Izzo presser. He provides more depth on just the game preview. He talks about the different players. I mean, Brandon today later on at 5:30 when I talk to the players, that's going to give me any cliche answer. Every answer is not going to be cliche on the matchup coming up against Georgetown this weekend. I mean, come on, guys. Let's be real here. I just see no problem with an athlete being obligated to talk to the media and answer a few questions. I mean, come on. He's not going to the podium being attacked physically at all. You're answering some questions. So what? You're a professional athlete. You get paid. You get paid millions of dollars to play a game. Answer some questions. Suck it up. It's ridiculous to me. So what is the obligation? I see nothing wrong with it at all. Let's hit the break. We have another break coming. Let's hit the break. When we come back, let's go and Throwback Thursday. Again, if you want to call in and express your thoughts on it, 517-355-9527, 517-355-9527.
States. Wrapped up like a deuce, another runner in the night, blinded by the light. Wrapped up like a deuce, another runner in the night.
Welcome back to Current Sports. It is Thursday, and you know I love this time of week because we get to go into our current sports time machine and look at some sports history and what took place on this Thursday in sports. Matt, what do we got, man? Is it a big Thursday today? Or
not really. We got a lot of Super Bowl action, though.
Figures. Okay.
A couple
figures.
Of memorable Super Bowls. One that apparently was not that memorable, 1994. This is Super Bowl 28. The Dallas Cowboys win a 30-13 decision over the Buffalo Bills. Apparently, it's not very interesting because the lead factoid of the little blurb here is Natalie Cole sang the U.S. national anthem.
Ah, her voice is like an angel.
Apparently, the game was not that interesting, though, if the lead is who sang the national
right,
anthem.
Right, exactly, yeah.
All right. Also in 1994, Dan Jansen of the United States set a world record of 35.76 seconds, who became the first to skate 500 meters in less than 36 seconds. So,
that's
nice
pretty good.
In the Lillehammer Games back in 1994. Also, let's keep going to 2000. The New York Mets announced that Garth Brooks would be training with the team on February 20th.
The
country
singer.
No words on whether Chris Gaines, his alt-rock alter ego, got an offer from the Mets either, but Garth Brooks, chance to trade with the Mets. Another thing in 2000, this is where athletes opening their mouths does get them into trouble. Kind of an extreme example. John Rocker of the Atlanta Braves suspended from Major League Baseball for disparaging foreigners, homosexuals, and minorities in an interview published in Sports Illustrated.
Oh, no. That's
a nice downer spot for him. Mm-hmm. Let's go way back. 1971, UCLA beats UC Santa Barbara 74-61 and begins an 88-game winning streak.
Wow, 88 games.
88 games ended in 1974 with a loss to Notre Dame. And then the aforementioned Super Bowl clips. Here we go. First off, let's go to 1983, where the Redskins played the Dolphins.
There's the snap. Hand to Riggins. Good hole. He's got the first down to the 40. He's gone. The 35, the 30, the 20. He's gone. He's gone. Touchdown, Washington Redskins.
John Riggins. That was John Riggins. 166 yards. He had a Super Bowl record. Of course, it was broke 5 years later when Timmy Smith ran for 204 yards in Super Bowl 22, but Riggins earned MVP honors in the Redskins' 27-17 win over the Dolphins.
Wow.
Moving a little more recently, back to 2000, it was the greatest show on turf, and they came this close to losing.
Back to throw is McNair. He's got Kevin Dyson, reaches to the goal line. No, he falls at the one. Time runs out. That's it. The St. Louis Rams are the world champions. As Tennessee comes up 1 yard short.
Oh, I remember that, man. Who was that? Was it George? Who came up? Was that McNair who came up short?
I thought it was.
Steve McNair to. Kevin Dyson. It was Kevin Dyson.
Kevin Dyson.
It was Dyson. Okay.
Kevin
I remember
Dyson.
I was young when that.
Who
happened.
Earlier
you know
in it was 2000.
2000.
Earlier in that playoffs, of course, was the Music City Miracle, where Frank Wycheck threw back to Dyson on the kick return to beat the Bills in the final seconds of the game. Yeah. One of the most memorable playoff moments in NFL history. And then they rode that wave all the way to the Super Bowl, fall short 23-16 at the Georgia Dome to Kurt Warner and the St. Louis Rams.
Yeah, wow. I remember that Super Bowl. That was entertaining. I remember watching with my dad that Super Bowl. Unbelievable. All right. Anything else? That's good?
That's it.
That is it. Well, thanks a lot. Throwback Thursday, baby. Always love looking back in sports history. Pretty good moments. This is a quiet Thursday compared to other Thursdays we've had in the past, but nonetheless entertaining. All right. Tonight, Michigan and Purdue. They get it on. Of course, Michigan is coming off of that win at the Breslin Center over Michigan State, and they sit atop the Big Ten. Guys, just a quick preview of that one. You know, Michigan right now, they've had 9 straight victories, 3 consecutive over top 10 teams. The first time they've done that in program history. Purdue facing back-to-back losses against Northwestern and Wisconsin. Guys, looking at this game, I do think, I don't know if we, have we done predictions on this game yet? I don't think we have. I'm going to go with Michigan. I don't know. We'll do predictions really quick.
I think Michigan gets it done easy. They're a much better team at home, and this is a home game, right?
It's a home game at Chrysler Center, yeah.
I think they're going to get done easy. Stauskas is just on fire right now.
He is.
Yeah, I don't even know what the point of picking it is because I don't think anybody's going to take Purdue. Yeah. I mean, they're okay. A.J. Hammonds is a good player, but he's about it. Going forward, if I'm a Michigan fan, the only thing I would be worried about is that they're peaking too soon.
Right. Yeah, that could be.
Because you don't get anything for being great in January.
That is true. Very, very true. And really quick tidbits here, which I didn't even know. I mean, Purdue's they love to push the ball. They love to get out in transition and attack the basket. They love to crash the offensive boards. They are the best offensive rebounding team, actually, in the league. But rank 7th or worst in all other major offensive stats. So that doesn't help there. And Purdue's defense is decent. Decent, I would say. When you talk about the three-point line, which could maybe give Stauskas some trouble, they defend the three better than anyone in the conference. Just 28.8% for opponents from behind the arc, but are attempting 39.9% of their field goals for opponents against Purdue. So they defend the three, but they don't defend anything else, basically. That's what basically that says. So, again, Nick Stauskas, I think he will have a big night. I mean, he's been great. He just – seeing him evolve from, you know, last year to now, I mean, he sees the court so well. His court vision is great. It's still – I mean, that shot, you know, he's an unbelievable shooter. He just has a better knack for the game this year, I think. I think Michigan does roll in this one. I'm going to go, if we can call a line here, I'm going to say Michigan by 13. I'm going to go Michigan by 13 in that one. So, also, guys, other action last night. LeBron James and Kevin Durant, they got it on. LeBron had 34 points, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, went 12 for 20. Kevin Durant, 33 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists, 2 steals. He went 12 for 23, so pretty. If you look at just on the stat sheet, that's similar games to a degree. But, you know, the thing about it is LeBron James has no help. I mean, they had an 18-point lead. The first time that Miami Heat has blown an 18-point lead since the Big Three have gotten together. And KD got help from multiple players. Even Derek Fisher hit a buzzer-beater three, I think, at the end of the third quarter. I mean, great game for both LBG and KD, but KD definitely had better personnel. It was a great moment in that game. I don't know if you guys watched it, but Kevin Durant and LeBron James going back and forth. Oh, my goodness. I mean, Kevin Durant will come down, hit a three. LeBron James comes down, hits a tough jumper. Kevin Durant comes down and hits another three. LeBron James attacks him on the drive. I mean, it was unbelievable. You know, I love watching that. And the thing that's so impressive, though, about the Thunder is that Kevin Durant and his team are getting wins and doing it without Russell Westbrook, which I think is so, so impressive. And KD did a great job of finding his teammates. I mean, they came out with the mindset of double-teaming Kevin Durant on just about every other possession. Kevin Durant, once he got double-teamed, would find Ibaka, would find Fish. I mean, and they got the W. But Kevin Durant is so impressive, and he is on a roll. I think it's 12 straight game now with 30 or more points.
Yeah, he's 2 games away for breaking or tying Tracy McGrady's 30 points per game record, consecutive games with 30 points a game, 14. Durant, I think, is at 12.
Unbelievable. And again, I don't think it's anything that the man can't do. I mean, he has a wingspan of 7'4". A 7'4" wingspan. That
remember when
is
people
just
were worried about him coming into the league?
Yeah,
and he wasn't strong enough.
Wasn't even strong enough. Exactly. I think that went out the window.
I think he's
now
plenty strong.
Yeah, without a doubt. I don't think in today's league you had to be big muscle man anymore. Like back in the 80s, more so 90s. Game is more finesse
it
now.
It does help when you're 6'10" and have 30-foot range. That
yes,
does help.
It
here's the thing:
does.
Some players are strong. They play through being sick. You're on the air playing through being sick.
I am.
Doesn't matter. We'll be back tomorrow, and I'm sure you'll be back.
I'm gonna be 100% healthy tomorrow. Okay. Please, Lord, I need that. I can't afford to get sick. All right, well, thanks so much to all of you for tuning in. Today is Current Sports. You've been listening to Current Sports with me, Al Martin, on WKAR East Lansing and WKAR FMHD3 East Lansing. As always, take care. Have one fantastic Thursday. Happy birthday time, Izzo. Be easy, people.